D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. A programming note. Normally on Mondays at 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock. We have 4 o'clock. Yes. I always get tongue-tied on that. 4 o'clock will move to tomorrow. So Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee will join us tomorrow at 4 o'clock. The Commodores had the weekend off. We will talk about the wild weekend in college football, specifically in the SEC, in this hour. But the Commodores are back in action this weekend hosting Kentucky. So we will catch up with Clark Lee tomorrow at 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock/Clark. I'm never going to stop doing
that. It's just part of the lingo in Nashville now. Everybody around town, they just know when it's 4 o'clock.
But
they know what you're talking about.
But I'm not sometimes
DVD?
I'm not trying to say 4 o'clock. I'm actually trying to say 4 o'clock, but it comes
don't tell anybody that. Just go with it. Just
it's
go
so ingrained in your brain.
It's a DVD term. That's what it is.
That's fair.
There we go, right?
That's
there.
Fair. Okay. It's a special
hit the bell.
It's a special feature on the DVD. Remember DVDs with special features? Kids don't know about DVDs these days, actual
What's
DVDs.
What's a DVD?
Oh, my God. The Titans lost yesterday. Speaking of oh, my God. The Titans lost yesterday 16-13 to the Houston Texans. No surprise there. We have a lot of reaction to get to on our text line about the loss, about Jeffrey Simmons' comments after the game. If you want in, 615-737-1025. Dylan on our text line says, at least when Cam said, we asked, he was referring to the whole team. Jeffrey only targets other people and never takes responsibility because he's a spoiled brat within the Titans organization. Robert's not the only one. Mm-hmm. Robert says, being down a bunch of receivers, is it finally time to catch the strep? Is it finally time?
They're still out there.
Hey, you just may get your wish. You just may get
It's the Mason
wish.
Kinsey show now.
Yeah. He proved that he can, you know, he caught a ball too.
He did catch a nice little wheel route.
Yeah, so hey.
So he Calvin Ridley.
That would have been huge to catch the one.
Big.
He's the only guy within a 15-yard radius.
It was a great design, route concept. Great.
Calvin Ridley out for the season with a broken fibula. He suffers on his first play back from his hamstring injury. So Calvin Ridley done for the season. Chim Dike went into concussion protocol, was cleared, but then suffered a chest contusion. So we'll see what his availability is for this coming week against the Seattle Seahawks coming to Nissan Stadium.
Pretty good team.
Although Sam Darnold did throw 4 interceptions last night. Elijah Manner left the game for a minute, came back, right?
Yeah.
So, hey, it may be time for Xavier Restrepo. I don't think it's time for Xavier Restrepo, but it's a war of attrition out there.
What did you think of the – Teron was talking about it.
Yes.
More two tight ends, more helm. Try to go that route rather than, you know, bring in Restrepo. I would think I would go more towards that and try to use my tight ends more.
Yeah, but, I mean, it would help, I guess, from a blocking standpoint, too. You can put that extra man on the line of scrimmage. Maybe it could work if you want the ball out of Cam's hands a lot faster than you incorporate the tight ends a lot more on those short routes and over the middle. So I can see them moving more toward that. But they're going to need another wide receiver or two if these other guys can't. I know Ridley's gone, but if these other guys are banged up throughout the week, they're going to have to activate at least one more receiver.
Wes in Hermitage says, DVD, except when Willie isn't there. Then y'all just have VD, sadly. I have mentioned this multiple times.
Okay.
David is a D.
Yes.
So when Willie isn't here, it's still DVD.
Slide in an extra D.
Exactly.
Yes. Phrasing, Willie.
Phrasing. As we've learned on the show.
Y'all are really bad at, you know, not phrasing your words correctly with the DVD.
Lest we forget, lustily boobs. A classic on DVD.
DVD classic.
Yes, let's go to Mike on our phone line. Mike, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. How you doing today?
Good, thank you.
Doing good, Mike.
Well, saw the game, and once again, predictable. But I kind of want to say it's time to fish or cut bait here. We've got a bunch of secondary guy sitting on the bench, and I don't want to throw off the veterans and the first-teamers, but we are officially out. We are officially out of the season. Whatever scenario you come up with, we can't even get a wild card this year. So what I'm saying is, if we're finding guys, younger guys, that can do a pretty good job, why don't we start using them at least for a couple of quarters for the rest of the year and use them as sort of a spring training, summer camp type thing for the rest of the year?
Is there somebody you have in mind when you ask that? Because I sort of ask myself that question each week.
And aren't there players?
Because I think there are a few.
Kevin Winston or Jalen Armour Davis.
Yeah, those guys, they have no choice. Those guys are going to play. Right. And what you're hoping is they get a little bit better each week. I think Cedric Gray's and Cody Barton are two good stories that are developing out of this group. I'm hoping one of the corners, just by being out there every week and getting picked on every week, hopefully makes some progress. I don't know. It hasn't happened yet. I like how Helm is coming along. I would love to see Spears go to another level. He teases you. He'll make a good play. But there's still not that big game that would have you going, okay, I want to keep this guy around for a while. It's the same thing every week.
So Mike, did you have a player or players in mind when you said that?
When I say player, you guys are ones of the players. I'm the guy that's like the strategist or the big picture thing where you put a guy up, I don't know his name, you guys are the experts at that. If he's doing a percentage-wise that you think above 50%, I say start playing him at least a little bit for the rest of the season. Let him grow. Let him grow in that position for the rest of the season so we know what he does next season. And then when we get our number one pick, which I hope we do and not blow it, then we can trade that number one pick for a bunch of draft picks and then trading picks that can improve all of this to help Cam Ward on the offensive line. And now that we lost Ridley, the best receiver, I don't know if he can come back from a bad break like that in his fibula, but we're going to have a running back.
It's a long list.
And we're going to have a new coach. We're going to have a new coach. Are we going to fire the whole staff? I think so. What we need to do is let these second stringers play this year, get experience in real-time games this year so that we know what they can do next year.
Thank you for the call, Mike. I'm just looking at the snap count on defense from yesterday, and as Willie said, you've got to just throw out whoever you've got when you consider all of the injuries
on defense.
It's not
a matter of whether they're going to play. They're going to play.
Right. But I'm looking, and I don't know.
If you have a pulse and they think you have a chance to get to the quarterback, you're in there, man.
So
if they thought Adam Vingood could give him a good edge rush,
oh boy,
sign him up.
That's a very scary thought. But I don't know how old all of these players are. But for example, Kevin Winston played 100% of the defensive snaps yesterday, as did Cedric Gray, as did Daryl Baker Jr. Arden Key's not a young player, I know that. Jalen Armour Davis played 37 snaps yesterday. Samuel Womack played 31 snaps. Tavondre Sweat played 28 snaps. Marcus Harris played 50 snaps. So I understand Mike's point. I think it's kind of already happening because of the injuries and trades that the Titans have made.
They still have 7 games?
Yikes.
There will be some more attrition that will open up more chance. So, to me, it's a non-issue. They're gonna have evaluations on these guys.
They have 11 rookies and 13 players, and this is minus the rookies, but 13 players with 3 or less years experience, not counting the rookies. The rookies are already so half of their roster makes up of guys with 3 years, almost half of their roster makes up of guys with 3 years or less. I understand what the caller's saying. You want to start possibly playing some of these younger players, and they're trying to. And some of it is because of injury, but they're trying to play some of these young players, and they're learning. It's trial by error with them. You saw it in the secondary yesterday, and you've seen it in previous weeks. That this young secondary isn't—they lack experience. they're not nowhere near refined as a player, and they're taking their lumps, and they're taking some big ones. So behind them, it's like you really don't have nobody. So you are playing your young guys. Even if you didn't want to play them, you got to play them now. And I think the Titans have been doing that, but you just can't throw a young guy out there for the sake of throwing a young guy out there. He has to show you the ability to sort of learn this stuff, but not only learn it, but then be able to go out and when the game really picks up and be able to go out there and just do without thinking. And a lot of times with these young, it just doesn't happen that way.
One texter says, what alternate universe timeline are we living in where both the Titans and Predators fans are both saying the season is over, just play the young guys? And we will get to the Predators later in the hour. One texter says, more Chestnut and Spears and less or no Pollard.
Pollard's not the problem. He's not. I think Pollard runs hard.
Didn't have much of a running game yesterday.
Yeah, they didn't have it. Cam led the
That's
Cam,
a good defense,
yeah,
though. Cam but led let's the say the Texans – problems
that run
on
defense,
offense.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a
Cam
good
led
defense.
Cam led the team with 33 yards. Good for Cam. That's not really good for the offense, but good for Cam that he decided to run. But, nah, I would like to see Spears, like Willie said, he teases us with these things, and you see it, but then it's like, man, you want more. And yes, for some reason, you're just not getting more. I like Chestnut too, so but I'm not going to go away from Pollard because, I mean, he's a solid pro and he's a strong runner.
That's an upgrade area that
yeah.
That would be one of the things that if you could get the bonanza of draft picks that you clearly have the opportunity to do this year if you're picking high, especially if you're picking number one, which I don't know. I mean, they play the Browns. They play the Saints. It's not – the tankathon is going to be interesting going forward. And again, we're not saying you go out there and try to lose, but they have such a – the guy – spent 5 minutes calling, hey, they need this and they need this. It's like he was making his Santa list early on. They've got a lot of needs on the roster, so they need a lot of picks. But running back for sure, like they're just, they need an electrifying something to go that Cam Ward could use.
I fired up tankathon.com. Let's take a look.
It took till 4:13 to do it. I'm surprised.
Tennessee at number one, the Giants at number two at 2-9. Cleveland at number three, New Orleans at number four, and the Jets at number five, all at 2-8. So that's your projected top five, according to tankathon.com. We have two marks on our phone line. Let's play Mark Roulette here. Which mark are we going to get? Thank you for calling. Whatever Mark picks up, please go ahead. Mark, are you there?
Yes.
Please go ahead.
Yes. Wanted to talk about the Titans offensive line.
Sure.
As bad as they've been, and this is just a I guess a question I'm throwing out to you, but in the last couple of years we've signed Cushenberry and we've signed Moore, and at the time we signed them, they were the top available free agent center and left tackle. Based on the output we're getting from the money spent, in the future, does it not make sense to, I mean, I guess I'm asking, what is the difference between somebody making the minimum veteran salary up against what we've paid out to these two players that's hurting our cap now, that we wouldn't we just get the same result?
Thank you for the call, Mark.
I understand what he's saying. Yeah, it's okay. You're overpaying for this guy, and you're not getting your bang for your buck. But if you go out here and say get a rookie or get you a veteran that is not going to cost you as much, wouldn't it almost be better to do that? Because you know you expect the guy that's making what you know Cushenberry and Moore is making. You expect really Moore. You expect him to be playing a lot better. He's playing, like the caller is suggesting, he's playing like he's one of the lowest paid left tackles in the game. So if that's the case, then why don't we just go pay a guy, a veteran guy, league minimum, and kind of go that route? I mean, they tried that before, too. It didn't work out.
That was the Dillard,
yeah,
right? That was sort of the approach with Dillard.
Exactly.
Like, hey, he's a former first-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
He's cheap. Yeah. Maybe we'll get, you know, a new scenery. We'll get more out of him. And we saw how it
worked. It didn't work.
So it doesn't always work.
A word to the wise. Anytime, and not just in football, anytime anyone tries to sell you on an acquisition by saying that player was a former first-round pick, alarm bell should be ringing, because usually it feels like, right, it doesn't always work.
Oftentimes, you are who you are after 4 years, whatever. We see it in hockey, right?
Yes.
But there's always that label of, hey, he was a first-round pick. So those guys always get the second chance.
Of course.
Right? They're going to get the second chance.
It's almost like, you know, because at the time it's like, okay, who else are we going to get? It's like, okay, I need it. It's like being in a store. Well, it costs, you know, $900 to fix your engine. I know it don't cost that much. It costs much more. But I'm just saying, $900 to fix your engine. I'm the only person that got this engine. There's no other good engines. And you're like, man, that's too much. All right, I need the engine. I got to go put it in. Let's go. That's how the Titans were. Like, he's the best available left tackle on the market. Yeah, we're going to have to pay for him. Okay, let's do it.
Got to have something.
Yeah, let's do it and see how it works.
Quickly, let's go to the other Mark, our friend Mark in Nashville on our phone line. Mark, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Boy, number one caller just can't get no respect.
Number one caller, number two Mark today.
Wow, man.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, Mark.
David, totally
your patience. Thank you for your patience and your high esteem that we regard you.
You know what, Dave? You know what, Mark? We knew you needed like that last word of the segment. We knew you needed it.
You're our closer.
Exactly.
You're our closer.
So let's do it. Get to it, Mark. Let's go.
Well, give me that bag then if I'm that close. I need that bag then. I definitely do. What's up, Adam, D-Mace, Willie? I don't want y'all thinking I'm not speaking to you today, but, hey, man, the Titans just got a lot of need. Oh, by the way, D-Mace, congratulations on Mark Andrews breaking your record.
Hey, that's good for him.
You're receiving your – yeah, dude, are you going to call him and tell him –
I sent him a message. Yeah, I sent him a message.
Okay.
Yes,
okay,
yes.
That's well done, D-Mace, well done. But, hey, man, the Titans, just like I said earlier this morning on Joe and Robbie's show, D-Mace, Willie Adam, they should have been trading these picks back years ago. Staronsky trade back. Latham trade back. They didn't want to see Cam come here. I really didn't, man, because they could have took that pick and they could have got a haul for it. And right now you wouldn't be talking about them being the worst team in the NFL. You'd have some playmakers, some players, maybe some offensive line help, running back. Whatever needs y'all needed, you could have had them if you did that. I hope they do that in this year's draft. Trade back and get a multitude of picks because, man, they're going to have to do something. You can't go out here and become a better team with free agency and all that. Gestapo, Crescempo, whatever his name, play the man, D-Mate. Let the guy come in and see what he can do. He's the all-time leading receiver down there in yards and catches in Miami. He must have did something right. Get a man a chance. Bring him off the practice squad. Sign him and let him play the rest of the season. See what you got with him. You can't see what you got with him if you're not going to play him. But, hey, Willie, I wanted to ask you a question. Did you get a chance to talk to Juan Soto up in New York?
Unfortunately, Juan's time was a little too precious, and my voice was a little off still, just recovering, you know, in New York. So I let Juan have his time when I was up there.
Oh, okay. Well, did you get my yellow canary jacket and get it ready to hang it up in the rafters of Madison Square Garden, Willie?
I was only there for a day, Mark. Like, it wasn't a week-long trip.
Okay.
Next time, we'll go back up there. We'll spend a little longer. Let's work on this, okay?
Because I'll send you a little money to help you out with the money and stuff.
Okay.
And we'll get that taken care of.
So we have a budget. This is good.
Oh, yeah. We'll make it right. Hey, Adam.
Yes, Mark.
I hadn't been hearing you talk about Duke lately. You know they lost Saturday, but, you know, they were in the running.
The football team, yes. The football team lost. Yeah.
So Adam is not interested in the
football
team.
Yeah, he doesn't care about the football team.
I thought you were talking about, like, his eyes perked up. Like, oh, Duke basketball?
Uh-huh.
Are you talking about Duke basketball?
Champions Classic, tomorrow, 8 o'clock, Duke, Kansas, Madison Square Garden. My father, Harlan Vingan, will be there. He's already in New York City. So, yes.
Yeah, that's all right. And you know what, Adam? I'm waiting to see him lose. We ain't talking about the Boozer Brothers now. I know who you're talking about. We're not going to get on the Boozer Brothers, even though they're playing good. But, you know, Duke will make a run. They got a great squad. The Boozer Brothers, one of them at least look like he's going to be a lottery pick, too. So, you know, and I've seen his dad at all the games, but I'll be watching that game tomorrow and stuff.
You can also watch D-Mace's Spartans before that play, Kentucky.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes.
We're going to run through Kentucky.
Yeah. That's right. We're gonna watch all that. But you know, now that I know I'm the closer, y'all give this number one caller some respect. Put some respect on my name.
Thank you for calling, Mark.
Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
Hey, while we're giving shout outs, I'm here to tell you the Vanderbilt's basketball team is looking good. You're not gonna know, they don't have a lot of, you know, huge featured non conference games. I'm liking what I see though. I'm confident they are better than they were last year.
Okay.
615-737-1025. We'll take a Titans breather here. Let's talk about the wild weekend in the SEC. And it was not a great weekend if you're a Vanderbilt fan. Willie can attest to that. But we will discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. We are brought to you by Bax Homeworks, which transforms kitchens, bathrooms, and living spaces into places you can't wait to come home to. Get a free estimate at BAXHomeworks.com. D-Mace, Vingen and Donick, 102.5. The game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen here with you. The Vanderbilt Commodores did not play this past weekend. The Commodores returned to action Saturday against Kentucky. Clark Lee will join us tomorrow. But it wasn't a good weekend in college football if you are a Vanderbilt fan. Oklahoma upsetting Alabama, bad. Texas getting crushed by Georgia, kind of bad. Good that Texas has a third loss, bad because now Vanderbilt lost to Texas and now Texas gets crushed by Georgia. So I don't know how you square that. We can ask our resident Commodores fan, Willie Donick. But Oklahoma beating Alabama 23-21. By the way, Oklahoma's past two wins. At Tennessee, at Alabama.
Impressive.
Incredibly impressive. Oklahoma's remaining schedule, home against Missouri, home against LSU. So, not going to say that you can lock in Oklahoma, but it's looking pretty good for the Sooners. But that result, Vanderbilt desperately needed Alabama to take out Oklahoma, and that did not happen. So,
and it seems to go further than that. Like, I was really hoping that on a weekend where you don't play, you get some help. And I was reading Stuart Mandel's recap of the weekend in The Athletic, and he was going through all that SEC stuff. He never even got to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt wasn't even in the discussion. I was disappointed to hear that. I still think you can only do what you can do if you're Vanderbilt, and that's win Saturday and then win the following Saturday, and then wherever the chips fall, they're going to fall. It would be a really disappointing thing. Can you imagine telling any SEC team, forget about Vanderbilt, with the schedule you had before the season started, say you go 10-2 with this schedule, mm-hmm. and you're not going to make the playoff? That's hard to believe.
Yeah.
That's hard to believe that could happen, and it very well could happen. I still think there could be some curveballs thrown, but nothing is significant at all unless you win the two games. So you can't just cry now before you've won the games. You got to win the games.
Yeah, you got to win the games first. And that's sort of what, you know, maybe that's why Vandy fans really don't want to go in. Because right now, if you've watched this team, I think they are deserving of being one of the 12 playoff teams. But that's not the case. And you just look at the remainder of their schedule. It's like, man, I want to scream and yell, but what happens if they go to Kentucky and just have one of those games? Now that just puts them out of – so the argument is completely over. It's almost like, let's wait to the UT game, and if they win that game, then we can scream and yell and talk about how the, you know, the system isn't, you know, fair for teams like Vandy and, you know, whatever the case may be. But, you know, it's just – I think Texas is out of it. I can't. The way they got beat this past week, I can't. Even though they are an 8-3 team and they beat Vanderbilt, the way they lost, I can't square that one up with saying, okay, even though they got beat down, I still think they deserve it. Whatever it is in three, they make it.
Well,
8-9-3.
Here's the kicker, and we'll get to what Texas A&M did this weekend. Texas plays Texas A&M in the season finale. So There was a lot of talk about, hey, could a 9-3 Texas team make the playoff? They failed the test at Georgia, but they're hosting Texas A&M to end the season. Texas A&M is one hell of a team.
And Texas A&M also in that game may not have to win to make the playoff. So the desperate team could be Texas. Here would be an interesting hypothetical. Texas, let's just say, is 9-3 with a win over Texas A&M. Got thrashed by Georgia.
Lost to Ohio State.
Had the guts to play Ohio State, right? And had a dud loss at Florida where they got beat bad. 9-3 Texas, 10-2 Vanderbilt. Texas having beaten Vanderbilt at Texas. At Texas. That would be an interesting debate. But I don't know. There's other things that would have to fall into place for that to come up.
Well, let me ask you this question. And a lot's going to change over the next couple of weeks. But at this moment in time, how many of these SEC teams would you consider locks or close to locks for the college football playoff? Texas A&M, mm-hmm. Georgia, mm-hmm. Ole Miss, mm-hmm. Alabama, mm-mm. Oklahoma.
I wouldn't say Alabama's a lock. Because here's the problem for Alabama and them losing that game. They got to play an Auburn team who, and is in Auburn. You end up the season at 9-7. Now, Vandy has a case. Because if Vandy wins the remainder of their games, they can say, we beat Auburn. Y'all lost to Auburn. I know y'all beat us. But if you look at that game, it would be even more chaos. So I'm not saying that Alabama is a lock. I don't think Alabama is a lock. It all depends on, to me, how they look if they lose that game. Right. How they look in losing to Auburn.
There's still some holding serve. Yeah. I don't know what the line would be on that game, but we also know that Auburn would do anything
exactly
to spoil Alabama's season. They'll put everything. Alabama is the better team of the two, but that's a good what if. Mm-hmm. What if? So when you say a lock, that means you could lose and still get in. So they're not a lock. They've got to win the Iron Bowl.
Let's talk about what Texas A&M did this weekend. I was shocked when I looked at my phone and saw the halftime score. South Carolina 30, Texas A&M 3. Oh my goodness, that would have thrown a wrench into the college football playoff. But Texas A&M rallied from 30-3 down at halftime. Marcel Reed, local product, 439 passing yards. Before Saturday, teams were 0 for 286 since 2004 in SEC play. Went down by 27 plus points.
I don't think that would have thrown a monkey wrench in.
You don't think so?
No, because you're losing to a team that has no shot of making anything. And if you still end up with one loss, you're making. Even if you lose to Texas, you're still in, depending on how that. No, I'm just saying.
But I was going to say, I thought you were going to say if they lost that, that's your screw up. You turn around and beat Texas. If you turn around and beat Texas, that probably makes up for it. But I think it illustrates when people want to bang on the schedule, you haven't beaten a ranked team or this team or that, or this team was ranked and they're not ranked anymore. South Carolina, despite all of their struggles, was good enough to go up 30-3.
And that would have helped Vanderbilt. If South Carolina would have beaten Texas A&M, wouldn't that have helped Vanderbilt?
I guess. But it also would have brought Texas A&M back into this pack of teams that Vanderbilt's trying to get through. So it's a mixed bag. But I think it just shows you that, like, South Carolina's got talent. Auburn has talent. The worst teams in the league, I think, are better than that last 6-8 teams in every other league, is my thought on it. LSU the same way. Like, beating LSU is a good win, despite all the troubles of LSU. And LSU at the time, I do think there is a nuanced argument. I get that they've fallen off and their record is what it is. But Vanderbilt's win against LSU, where LSU was number 10 in the country, is a really good win. Even though now it's a win, quote, against, well, they're not ranked. They're not ranked. You haven't been any ranked teams.
quickly, I want to get Willie's thoughts on something that Derek and I talked about last week. Derek got fired up about brand bias. Specifically, Notre Dame versus Vanderbilt. Willie, I can only imagine where you stand on this hot button issue.
It's a thing. I don't think there's any doubt. I think it happens in college basketball as well. I hope that in this time where you have more data to analyze and you have supposedly another wave to try to get away from that, and it's not just, well, so-and-so has one loss, you have two losses, let's go with the one-loss team. And especially if two losses and you are the brand name versus one loss, you're not the brand name, I do think the brand bias is hard to weed out. There's always an assumption that Notre Dame is just better than Vanderbilt, that Notre Dame is better than Indiana, that Oregon is better than Indiana just because of the brand. I do think that just it's imprinted in your mind just because that's how college football was for decades. They have to try their best to balance that out.
615-737-1025 will take your thoughts on the wild weekend in college football. The latest CFP rankings come out tomorrow. We'll see what happens. We'll see where the Commodores are after not playing over the weekend. But coming up next, Willie's back, which means the Predators are also back. And there's something that a lot of Predators fans are wondering about now that the team is home. And we will discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.
Andrew, after the emotional win on Friday night, you knew they would push back. How disappointing was it that your team wasn't able to match that early today?
Yeah, it was disappointing. I think the traction that we gained, we just let slip away again, you know, especially the first period. I thought all the things that we talked about that we did on Friday, we did not do. And we knew they'd have a bigger sense of urgency. And the puck meant more to them than us that period. And it's a tough way to start a game, let alone give up three early, you know. So, yeah, disappointing.
That was Predators coach Andrew Burnett yesterday. After
was
the Predator.
It,
I mean, you're the one that just traveled thousands of miles.
I guess yeah, it was well, yesterday,
you,
yes.
You're the person that has lost track
right.
of time.
Yeah, right. So if you think it wasn't yesterday, then who are we yesterday. To judge? It was yesterday. It was indeed yesterday.
It was actually like this time yesterday in Sweden, which was, I don't know.
Willie's still getting his bearings, but that was Andrew Burnett yesterday after the Predators lost 4-0 to the Pittsburgh Penguins. To wrap up the NHL Global Series in Stockholm, Sweden, the Predators had a come-from-behind win, an exciting come-from-behind win on Friday. Philip Forsberg ties the game late in regulation. Steven Stamkos scores in 3-on-3 overtime. But the Predators were unable to build off of that. They sleptwalked through the first period, and that's really all the Penguins needed. They held on for a 4-0 win. And now that the Predators are home, and now that the Predators do not play until Saturday, and now that the Predators have lost 9 of 11, a lot of people are wondering what's going to happen with Andrew Burnett. And Elliot Freeman, our friend Elliot Freeman, who joins us every Thursday, he discussed Andrew Burnett on the latest edition of the 32 Thoughts podcast, which dropped this morning. And Elliot made a couple of points. The first was, he said that when he's watching a team that's struggling, a team that everybody thinks is going to make a coaching change, he asks himself this question: are the players playing hard? And Elliot thinks the Predators players are playing hard. In his estimation, and Willie, you were there, so you can agree, I assume you will, that if the Predators weren't playing hard for Andrew Burnett, they wouldn't have won the game on Friday. They wouldn't have come back the way they did late in that game and won that game if they weren't playing hard for Andrew Burnett. And I, from afar, but I've been around plenty of teams, I don't get the sense that this team has quit on Andrew Burnett. I just don't think the team is very good. I'm not worried about this team tuning him out. I don't get that vibe. I don't think Willie does either. The other thing that Elliot Freeman brought up was Bill Haslam. And he said that the new owner of the Predators doesn't want to make any rash decisions. He wants to make sure he has all of the information before coming to a conclusion. So based on what Elliott said this morning on his podcast, I'm not going to completely rule it out. But if I had to guess, I would guess that Andrew Burnett will be coaching this team on Saturday. But I know a lot of Predators fans, Willie, are wondering, after the losing is continuing, the losses are piling up, the team is off for 5 days. Again, they don't play until Saturday. This would be, in theory, a perfect time to make a coaching change. But if I had to guess right now, I don't think it's going to happen, at least right now.
It's been, to try to give you a little perspective, it's been such a whirlwind for the last month, pretty much. 12 games in 20 nights, and right after, the minute the 12th game is over on the 29th, you're going cross oceans to go play in Sweden. So there's been a lot happening. There's been a constant motion. There hasn't been time to even breathe, although in Stockholm was a good little reset for a day or two because you didn't have to play right away. But I see what everybody's looking at, right? You now have a break in the schedule. You've played about a quarter of the games, so you have an evaluation of what you have. And you can assess, you know, how are they doing? I agree with the assessment. For the most part, they've played hard. They're not quitting on Andrew Burnett, but they're not playing well. They're just not playing well consistently enough. They deserve to win the first game. They easily could have won that game 3 or 4 to 1. I think they were that much better than the Penguins in the first game. And you're sitting there going, are they going to lose this game 1-0? Because that's what it looked like it might be, even though they badly outplayed the Penguins. They pulled it out. They get a great lift. And then they come back and play very poorly right out of the gate in the first 10 minutes. And that was, you could hear the disappointment in Andrew Burnett to have that happen. And the Penguins are not a great loaded team, right? It'd be one thing if the Penguins were the Penguins of 10 years ago, just like the Predators aren't the Stanley Cup. These two teams are in different spots right now. But that was very disappointing to come back after a big win that you needed really bad and then lose the game in the first 10 minutes. And there were a couple of really fluky plays. There was one, Evgeny Malkin scored. I mean, I want to know what, you know, his lucky rabbit's foot or whatever. He scored two goals from behind the goal line that banked off of Predators and went in. Maybe he's that good, but that didn't help. But the Penguins were all over the Predators in the first 10 minutes. Nashville lost the game right there. And then they haven't been this type of team all year, explosive enough to crawl out of a hole like that. So what do you do? I don't know. I do think you have a couple of days to sort of sit back. Today should be sort of a hit the reset button, get away from it. Maybe come in tomorrow and decide which direction do you want to go. Because with each passing loss, you now have to win
X amount of games.
You got to win a lot of games to get back into the playoff race. You've got all these young kids in Milwaukee. You do have some players who are in the last year of a contract that are probably movable. But you have to ask, are the kids in Milwaukee ready to be thrown in there? So these are all the things that I think you have to be calculated about. But I agree that it's a quarter of the season in the books. You've got a few days. It is time to have a little bit. And I would say this, even if they were, you know, 11-9 or whatever the record might be, you assess after a quarter of a season, especially when you've gone through this whirlwind playing without Roman Josi, who they miss terribly. They're not making plays. Mm-hmm. They just struggle to make plays on a consistent basis. Roman Josi makes plays. So they've been able to stay in games, close games, but they're lacking playmakers to win the close games. And they also aren't quite good enough at the stickler for detail that you have to have if you're a little low on playmakers, mm-hmm. right? You can battle your way if your team is locked down and I'm not giving you anything easy, even though we might struggle to score. Right now, they're lacking in both of those areas, and you see where the record is.
And Derek and I talked about this last week. Making a coaching change isn't going to solve all of the issues that are plaguing this team. There are more deeply rooted issues than who's coaching the team. But since the start of last season, the Predators have the second worst points percentage in the NHL at 0.412, the only team with a worse points percentage, the San Jose Sharks, a team that is actively rebuilding. The Predators have won 36 of their past 102 games since the start of last season. And, Willie, this is the point that I made with Derek last week. As I just said, changing the coach isn't going to solve a lot of the issues. Maybe they get that coach bump I've talked about a lot. Maybe they play a little bit better. But they're not going to transform into a competitor by making a coaching change. But it, you know, the one thing that Elliot Friedman did say on the 32 Thoughts podcast about the Predators is, what's the one thing we all know can spur an owner into action? Losing money. If Bridgestone Arena looks a bit emptier, if tickets aren't being sold, if merchandise isn't being sold, if people are voting with their wallets, I believe is the term, then that may change Haslam's mind to be more patient with Barry Trotz and then, by extension, Andrew Brunette. But I just think it's a crisis of consumer confidence. I believe that's the term, Derek, that Elliot used on our show last week. It's a crisis of consumer confidence. Predators fans see a team standing behind a coach who has won 36 of his past 102 games, and they're wondering, what's going on here? Predators fans see this as part of a larger issue about the direction of the franchise. And I stand by this. Maybe, I mean, you guys can tell me if I'm cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs here. If, I firmly believe this, if Andrew Brunette's boss was anybody other than Barry Trotz, he would have been fired by now. I think that Trotz's history as a coach is helping Brunette keep his job right now. I just think it's a crisis of consumer confidence, and Predators fans want to know that the organization is trying to improve and not firing a coach who has struggled mightily, and it's not all of his fault, I understand that, but not firing a coach that has struggled mightily over the past season and a quarter gives off the vibe that the organization isn't committed to improving.
Well, I think they are. I think the problem is, and Elliot said it, this team continues to play, and they continue to go out there and give it their all. They're not a good team. They can't. They have a hard time winning the close games. They're just not a good team right now. But if you feel the players, especially the veteran players, are still fighting and clawing and going out there and doing the things that you're asking them to do, then that may give the GM a pause. Like, okay, I can see if he had lost the locker room, then, hey, we got to move on. Because that's sort of the end of the line. When you lose lock, that's the end of the line. We have to fire you regardless if I like you or not. I don't think that has happened. So it makes that dilemma a little bit harder. And Yossi's not there. So it's like, you know, do I wait and see if there's any improvement? Should I wait for, you know, Yossi to come back? How do I proceed in all this? But all the while, the fan base is thinking, you know, this is getting worse and worse.
They play Colorado on Saturday, who is playing lights out. They play the two-time defending champion on Monday, Florida. So, and that starts a stretch of 5 games in 8 days through the week of Thanksgiving. So they're going to jump right back on the ride, and it's going to be a lot of hockey. I don't know if Yossi is in the picture for any of these next five. I'm not sure. There's probably going to be some sort of reevaluation in these next few days to see just how close he may or may not be. So I do think this is, it's your regular time to evaluate where you would be. This was a logical one. So I'm not sure what the answer is, to be honest with you. The question would be, what are you trying to get out of this season? Do you? Because Barry Trotz has said all along, I'm hoping to thread the needle of keeping these 30-somethings, Marchessault, Stamkos, Yossi, Forsberg, those guys productive, while all along developing the next core. Mm-hmm. Right now, I think right now you're seeing the space. The veterans are not producing. Philip Forsberg's having a pretty good year. Yossi's not playing. Stamkos, Marchessault, struggling, fair to say. Brady Shea, struggling, not carrying the load. Ryan O'Reilly, still very good, but not a guy that's going to put the team on his back. So you have flaws in the roster. And at the same time, other than Matt Wood, you have this young group of guys who are anywhere between 18 and 20, 21, sometimes 22, that aren't elevating from the bottom. So right now you're 0 for 2 in what you hope was going to happen, right? You get a big lift, you get some juice from the young legs, and you get some cagey veterans that are still polite. So what's your goal? Do you think another coach could get way more out of both? I don't know. Or do you just ride it out and say, you know what, we thought it was going to work. We have to play the long game now and wait another year for the kids and go from there. I don't know.
615-737-1025 will take your thoughts on the Predators, who are back in Nashville. They are off until Saturday, a nice week-long break or five-day break after all of that travel to and from Sweden. 615-737-1025. I mentioned we have two giveaways. I've already done one, so we're going to do another. If you want a four-pack of tickets, I think this is a pretty good one. If you want a four-pack of tickets to see AEW next Wednesday at the Pinnacle downtown, Dynamite and Collision, AEW Dynamite and Collision the day before Thanksgiving, Wednesday, November 26th, be caller number 3. Right now at 615-737-1025. Caller number 3 will win a four-pack of tickets to see AEW Dynamite and Collision, two shows in one, at the Pinnacle on Wednesday, November 26th. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.